When I was younger, I hated my appearance, and as far as I knew, so did all of my friends. If any one of us ever had the thought that we liked how we looked, that was something we kept quiet. I hoped that when I became a teenager, then I'd finally be pretty, and then I'd feel good about myself. The glow-up transformation videos weren't really a thing until I was older, but if they had been popular when I was in middle school, oh my God, I would have been obsessed with trying to glow up. It seems like a quintessential part of the growing up experience is that there's always something to criticize about your personality or about your looks, especially for girls. In high school and college, I put more effort into trying to be pretty than ever, hoping maybe I would finally become confident, but I didn't really, and I still wasn't happy with how I looked. It's like I was getting better looking, but then my standards of what was pretty enough were rising, so I could never match up. That little story probably sounds kind of sad, but overall, I don't think my experience was actually that bad. And if I was part of Gen Z or Gen Alpha right now, I think there's a good chance it would be much worse. Even though I'm in my late 20s now, I'm still on social media and I still feel the mixed messages from all directions telling me to love myself, but never skip the anti-aging routine. And it's a little late to start Botox, but don't let the patriarchy influence you into wearing your makeup a certain way. Do it for yourself. The feeling of being surrounded by people prettier than you is pervasive. Fleeting micro trends and being too poor to keep up is way worse than past generations. And on top of all that, I'm starting to consider that this whole problem of prettiness is not just because we live in a society and in theory could be fixed with cultural shifts and changing opinions, but because it's in our DNA. We're at least a little bit programmed to think the way we do about beauty biologically. So, what will it take for us to finally accept ourselves and others regardless of how attractive we are? There is something called the availability heuristic, aka availability bias, which basically means that if you can easily recall something, if you can think of recent examples, we think that it's reflective of what is most common and most important, even if it's actually only a small portion of reality. Back when baby boomers were younger, the people they saw most days were family, friends, coworkers, classmates, and some strangers like out in town, compared to Gen Z and Gen Alpha. Now, families are smaller, friend groups are smaller, class sizes are a little bigger, coworkers are about the same, but you see them much less, and strangers is way, way, way increased. But not out and about. I mean online, in perfectly timed poses and videos at the right angle with editing and filters. A lot of people talk about how the images we saw of women in the 90s and early 2000s were way more harmful than what we see today with the constant fat shaming of size 2 celebrities by magazines and gossip columnists on the early internet. And maybe it's true that the content is more brutal, but when it comes to quantity, there is no comparison. Just think of how many people's faces and bodies you see scrolling for just 15 minutes. So, like past generations maybe saw 50 people in a day, typically in less curated settings. And now, any random teenager could easily see 1,000 people in a day, 90% of which are putting their best face forward. So, yeah, if we didn't have social media, there would still be celebrities and other forms of media showing us beautiful people, but perhaps we could avoid drowning in an ocean of it. This is what distorts perception into thinking that everyone's prettier than you. Even though average and below average looking people post themselves online, we're not shown them as often. Social media has taken a page out of Hollywood's book, where, like, in the old days, people would go see a movie if there were more beautiful celebrities in it. And nowadays, we will stay scrolling longer and view more ads if the algorithm shows us gorgeous influencers. And while our behavior of seeking out pretty people is encouraged by companies who want our attention to make more money, it's also kind of innate. We're humans, and our brains prefer to look at a more aesthetically pleasing view over an okay one, which is not just about people. We would prefer to look at the Northern Lights over just a random Ohio small town street. And we also maybe would prefer to look at Zendaya over Louis Capaldi. If you think about the people you see at the grocery store or at your job, how many people look like Zendaya and how many people look like Louis Capaldi? Everyone is only prettier than you online because we've designed it that way. It may have been crafted by capitalistic companies, but we feed into it by rewarding the most beautiful people we see online with our parasocial love, support, and engagement. As much as we enjoy beauty, I think most of us started getting a little overwhelmed with attractive people being shown to us, especially as the level of unattainability and quantity increased. Even the stars, who are obviously pretty, back in the day, it was not that uncommon to see an unflattering photo of them. Even though they were better than us, they still seemed human. Now it can be literally impossible to see a slightly wrong angle of an influencer because they're much more in control of how they portray themselves physically. I think that has maybe been correlated with the growing movement over the past 10 years for the people we see to better represent how the population looks. Society has been calling for the people who have historically been excluded over the years to be given a place in media. We may want to see more diversity, like bigger people, darker skin people, people who are older and look their age, some with disabilities, some who don't fit gender norms, but there's clearly been a limit on their place. Not too much of those people. Despite the popularity of the body positivity movement, your chances today of becoming popular in the mainstream or an influencer are far better if you're white, slim, able-bodied, gender-conforming, and not too old. And the one thing we really don't want to see is ugly people, maybe slightly unattractive, but only as a joke or a creepy villain. Maybe the whole idea of body positivity could have done better if we were pushing this messaging before the era of the influencer got too far, like in the early days of social media, before pretty people exploded online everywhere. And another problem is the spokespeople. Half the videos I see preaching self-love are from people who 90 to 100% fit the current beauty standards, or maybe they're like a heavier weight, but otherwise completely conventionally attractive. I don't know. It makes the message harder to be received when we're all rolling our eyes. This study analyzed Instagram posts with the hashtag body positivity, and only 43% actually depicted larger bodies. We can say that we accept fat people or slightly unattractive people all we want, but the reality is they don't get as much online praise and engagement, and the algorithm is going to reflect that. If someone who doesn't fit into the typical beautiful standards of the moment has the balls to post themselves showing confidence, they are often torn to shreds in the comments. So is someone going to see videos like these of people being body positive and think they're treated even worse than if they would have just said nothing? And the phrasing of this movement has not gone over well, like pushing to love every inch of yourself, that you're perfect. Like, that's a little much. And for all this popularity, has it even worked? Young girls' confidence and self-perception rates are going down despite the existence of Lizzo and Aries' Real campaign. We're not really in a much better place than before. to go from the absolute extreme language of the early 2000s to now the polar opposite, I do think is trying to force a big jump, which is why I do prefer body neutrality. Maybe I can try to feel the same way about my stomach as I do about my shoulders. Do I hate my shoulders or love my shoulders? No. They're okay. I'm sure different things work for everybody, but I think steps in the right direction over time are more feasible than a big jump. And hopefully it'll also mean attracting less opposition. Even if you manage to climb the mountain of self-confidence and against all odds become generally happy with how you look, there's still one thing that you don't have control over, and that's how other people treat you based on appearance. Pretty privilege is something that has probably existed since the earliest humans, the ones who looked the best, which probably just equated to the ones who looked the least close to death, were able to reproduce the most. Nowadays, the pretty population is given special bias when it comes to getting interviews, getting hired, climbing the corporate ladder, higher earnings, and not just in the work environment. They're also more likely to get good grades, receive help from others, assume to be more talented, get more positive attention on dating apps, less likely to be arrested or convicted by juries, or to receive quality medical care. This gap between attractive and unattractive treatment by others is especially wide for women. Pretty privilege also has a snowball effect. If you start out looking a little better than your peers naturally and achieve more success in part because of that, you are now in a better position to keep up with changing beauty standards and following trends. Your natural advantage may have given you a financial ability to buy nicer clothes or get your hair done more often, invest in whatever products are currently required to be beautiful. I think a great example of this is the Kardashians. Before they were famous, they were attractive, but with their notoriety and money compiling from both their starting looks and their understanding of media and PR, they were able to go on and literally become the faces of beauty, setting the standard of what was popular. In 2015, when Kylie admitted to getting lip fillers, online searches for lip fillers increased by 3,000%, which she then went on to profit $19 million in a single day by selling her lip kits. So no, I don't feel that sorry when you feel the pressure to look perfect and get criticized when you don't, because your entire empire has been built off telling women that they should buy your products to fit societal standards in order to be good enough. The call's coming from inside the house. I will say though, if Kylie Jenner, who literally has the world at her disposal to make herself as gorgeous as possible, is losing status as a beauty icon, that really does cement the fact that for the rest of us, living up to outside appearance expectations is probably futile. Obviously, we don't expect to reach the pretty privilege of celebrities, but us normies are trying to just reach tolerance, and tolerance is the first step on a long, long path. Saying everyone's welcome here is not the same as we made this place with you in mind. And that's what I'd love to see more of. Places and movements going out of their way to provide equity to marginalized groups, because unfortunately, they are often synonymous with groups being considered unattractive by traditional standards or have to work harder to be at an accepted level of beauty, and creating these places without a monetary incentive behind it. And on an individual level, just like how you have to put in the work to recognize internalized racism or misogyny when you're judging others and stop yourself, you can do the same when you see someone who isn't particularly attractive to you and say, hey, not cool. I should be basing my opinions based on who they are on the inside. I feel like I witnessed a pretty noticeable shift when I was becoming an adult of the internet going from a place where the masses could learn and gain access to things previously out of reach to a place where we are used as an audience to be sold to. Like when I was in middle school, in my early teen years, I discovered one of the first beauty YouTubers who really was making it big. I watched all of Michelle Phan's tutorials. It sparked an interest in me and a hobby. And I remember like watching her poker face tutorial and using the little makeup that I had and mostly my mom's makeup at the time to follow her videos step by step and recreate the look. It was back when beauty gurus felt genuine and sincere and liked to try new makeup looks just for the fun of it. And she obviously exploded in popularity, and I witnessed for the first time someone who seemed like a regular person become an influencer. When she took the deal with Lancôme, everyone was calling her a sellout. In her videos, the use of drugstore and affordable makeup and skincare declined, and when it was there, it felt like a conscious effort rather than a natural decision. But worst of all, it felt like the joy of makeup was disappearing. Her videos sometimes became commercials for luxury products, and they weren't at affordable prices. And even though she was singing their praises, we could see the proof right there in the video. Like, it didn't look that good. And although Michelle got a lot of flack for this at the time, now it's everywhere. Influencers shilling whatever kind of product to make a quick buck. Companies saw an open space and an opportunity to push consumers to try and buy things to become prettier, because even though there is very much artistry and fun elements of the makeup industry, there's also the side of covering yourself up and feeling insecure. Even though brands were able to gain massive presences online in the beauty guru craze of the 2010s, there still was a problem, and it was becoming too accessible. Beauty tutorials were teaching us makeup skills. As long as you had some time and basic products, you could learn how to do a winged eyeliner and therefore fit into the current trends of the moment and standards of beauty. For-profit companies had their major moment getting women to spend thousands on huge collections, but that couldn't last forever. So enter the new trends of the past 5 years. Clean girl, glass skin, freckles, minimalistic, slow beauty, and conscious ingredients. Less is more. The 2010s were more is more, and not just with makeup and your face, but with body type trends as well. Oh God, what a disgusting phrase. But it was very desirable to have a very curvy body. And now we're back to being less. People who are rich, and CEOs specifically, have an interest in maintaining their high societal status and making sure that not too many other people can join them up on that level. One of the ways they can do that is by trying to limit the amount of success and pretty privilege achieved by other classes by pressuring us to adhere to beauty standards, which requires spending our money. So on the surface, it might seem like going back to a more simple, natural look sounds more accessible and less expensive. But unfortunately, I think that this new direction might be worse. Credit goes again somewhat to the Kardashians for normalizing plastic surgery, or at least the look of plastic surgery, from lip fillers to BBLs. From 2000 to 2009, there was a 69% increase of cosmetic procedures in the US, and from 2019 to 2022, just a 3-year period, procedures increased 19%. Pretty much every single year, it goes up. I think past celebrities didn't want to look too unnatural or extra. So any work that they had done was able to be swept under the rug. Like, they still looked like themselves and like believable humans. But now we're plagued with Instagram face and Ozempic being positioned as normal. Not only is everyone getting work done, but it's all the same work. Fillers in the lips, under the eyes, in the cheeks, buccal fat removal, slightly too large veneers, the exact same tiny nose on everyone, and GLP-1 drugs to lose weight. Women on reality shows and influencers are kind of an exaggerated example of what the rest of us experience. They feel a lot of pressure to look good and be valued based on their appearance, and they're expected to keep that up and do everything they can to look perfect before they are subjected to judgment on a mass scale. On TV, they can wear heavy makeup and it doesn't really come across as strong, but in real life, wearing a full glam face is out of fashion. So if you, a regular non-celebrity, have deep sockets under your eyes, you have a few options. Number one, do nothing and take the risk of the possibility that this small, typically considered unattractive feature may slightly affect your opportunities or social capital. Option two, load up on concealer and hope that not adhering to the current trends in makeup doesn't affect your social capital at all. It might not. Or three, spend some money to get filler. If it looks good, you have the opportunity to gain some social status and pretty privilege based on your new look. There's also the sense that you need to capitalize on this while you're still young. Make yourself as pretty as possible to reap as much of the benefits as you can now before it's too late. Gen Z is crazy about anti-aging, but it's really been the case for years now that once women, even very beautiful women, reach a certain age, they are treated differently and in some ways invisible. So maybe Gen Z saw that and thought, okay, if I start retinol at 12 and buy this weird straw at 15 and get Botox at 19, then maybe I won't look 40 until I'm 50. Now that the natural clean girl look is in, it is very hard to change any of your features that you weren't born with to appear on trend without hitting up the med spa. Even though the trend of lots of makeup was expensive, at least it was non-committal. Full lips are in, and in 2016, companies said, buy this lipstick and overline and you'll get positive attention. But now, you still need to have full lips, but lipstick is out. You just need to have full lips naturally, with a touch of lip gloss or maybe a tinted balm. And if you're upper class, that's no problem, but if you're middle class or lower, you're falling behind. The standard of beauty has to always be changing and rising to not quite be within easy reach of the majority. And because of that, I'm predicting in the not too distant future, wealthy people will be looking towards gene editing for their kids to make sure that they can have the full experience of living life pretty because they can afford it. As much as I would like to pat myself on the back for having original thoughts, I think the younger generations are catching on to the fact that the two main drivers behind beauty standards for the longest time have been for-profit businesses and patriarchal culture. And while I still see harmful trends popping up regularly, and I'm not sure what the limits are to how much we can fight against them, considering I think at least part of beauty is objective, but not all, I also have seen some positive behaviors and messages gaining traction lately. One of them being the death of the beauty guru. I recognize that there is still plenty of makeup influencers raking in views, but it is nowhere near the amount that was 10 years ago, causing subreddits like makeup addiction to grow massively, and beauty product buying was out of control. In the past few years, many of these creators' best performing videos are decluttering, de-influencing, what not to buy, and under consumption core, and I really like to see that shift. And when it comes to body standards, on the one hand, there has been a rising prevalence of skinniness over curviness, often tied with the popularity of Ozempic and similar meds. Not that skinny was ever really out, but I have also seen a pretty substantial backlash against this, particularly with women saying, like, no, we cannot go back to those early 2000s days of fat shaming, even reclaiming the word fat to just be a descriptor rather than an insult. To go to extreme lengths just to be skinny is very dangerous, and even in mainstream media, there has been criticism of people who are essentially depriving diabetics who are in much greater need just so that they can be skinny. I also think Gen Z fashion is a pretty strong statement against the traditional patriarchal view of beauty. I'm not a big fan of the popularity of fast fashion, but baggy clothing, thrifting, gender-neutral clothing, I think all these things are purposeful choices to say, hey, I don't want to participate in these patriarchal views that see women as just sex objects, and I don't care about fitting into the male gaze. And while thrifting is still participating in capitalism, it's also prioritizing sustainability and ethical shopping. I almost feel like the current look in fashion actually detracts from all the typical measures of beauty. It hides your body. It doesn't draw too much attention to the face. Even something small like pimple patches, instead of desperately trying to hide the fact that you have a pimple because it's ugly, it's like announcing, hey, I have a pimple and I'm going to put a sticker on it because it's fun. I know all of this stuff is really cyclical, so we'll see if in 5 years, tiny, short, male gaze type clothing is in again. Who knows? Also, I'm a fan of the rising personalized appearance choices, like figuring out which colors look best on you. Hair care and skin care that is customized based on your unique qualities. Instead of doing just what everyone is, what looks best on you. I realize that so much of what I've talked about in this video hinges on you caring about others' opinions of you. And if you're someone who has managed to escape that, please feel free to enlighten the rest of us in a comment below. As much as it sucks, humans do base our self-worth on both internal and external standards. But even still, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with wanting to be more beautiful. We just need to be more realistic with ourselves. A few years back, I finally came to the conclusion that I'm tired of putting in the effort to try and get my hair to not be frizzy. Sometimes it's just gonna be frizzy. Do I like how it looks? Not really, but the amount of effort and time that I would have to spend to get it to be not frizzy all the time is just going in my column of not worth it. Frizzy hair is not the end of the world, and it certainly poses no danger to my health. So I can either spend that time doing a different beauty maintenance routine that I enjoy more and makes me feel confident, or on something else entirely unrelated to beauty, like the New York Times Sudoku or cuddling my cat. I suspect that as you get older, you'll eventually start to care less about fitting so many beauty standards and naturally start to prioritize. But if that's a long ways away, I think that changing your media habits can help, like spending less time scrolling, looking at unrealistic faces. Unfollow anyone who the only thing they do is just be pretty. Like, they have to provide something else positive to you when you see their posts. I actually saw my feed start to change in real time while I was working on this video, because I was making an effort to find people with more normal appearances. So they started showing up more and more. Who you interact with most does matter. If you have any suggestions about what has helped you not judge yourself and others too harshly based on looks, please share them in the comments. And I hope you enjoyed this video. Thanks for watching. Pancake, what do you think?